Assessment, House Bill 3389, we will not be taking any action on that. That's the lottery bill. I was hoping last week there was an effort to resurrect it or change it or revise it, and I thought that was possible, but the cross currents seemed to be too strong, so I apologize for any confusion to the proponents, the opponents, and everyone in between, but we're not going to be able to move that one this year. I do want to open it by public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 851, our favorite topic, guilty. Can you give us an overview of where this has evolved to? And we had an in-depth discussion about it last week on what was then the dash fives and sixes, and now we're on to the eights. Apparently, most of this has been resolved.
Mm-hmm. So, Chair Haas, members of the committee, again, this is the bill that tries to deal with guilty. The dash eight, again, is a replacement for the bill, and it does substantively the same fixes or the same type of fixes as last time. There was one small language change to deal with the disagreement that we discussed during the last meeting. There is a minimal fiscal impact, and there's no revenue impact. I've updated the revenue impact statement to kind of indicate a little bit of background on why this is no impact. So this talks about the repatriation and the way that the committee tried to deal with this during the 2018 session, the fact that the personal side was not dealt with at the time, and this has to do with timing of the session of when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, and also of guidance both from the IRS and then DOR. And so the income was no longer flowing through after federal form changes. And so the Department of Revenue, in consultation with the Department of Justice, issued some guidance instructing taxpayers to add these amounts back. So the first kind of conceptual change that the bill makes is it clarifies that individuals that received a federal deduction for this one-time repatriation must add those amounts back. And because the department is already enforcing this guidance in that manner, there's no revenue change from that. However, the collections, the timing of the collections may change because rather than going through audit, these taxpayers could file amended returns, and so this income might change in timing, but there's no difference in revenue. The second large change that it makes is to deal with guilty. It basically says that Oregon will treat guilty in the same manner as a dividend, and to avoid a double deduction, we are asking taxpayers to add back the federal deduction they got for guilty, and then the corporations receive an 80% dividends received deduction to apply to that income. And then the third major change, or substantive conceptual change that the bill makes, is to avoid a double deduction for the 245 Cap A foreign source dividend income. And we're going to allow the federal 100% DRD, but disallow an additional 80% DRD at the state level.
That's a mouthful.
Yes.
And all we were trying to do was not have a double deduction. We've gone through quite a journey there. Any questions of Caitlin? Senator Boquist?
Thank you. I do have a question. I'm looking at the staff measure summary for the dash eight, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I should be like. And it says that requires when calculating Oregon taxable personal income in tax years beginning on or after 2017, individuals add back amounts. So we're asking individuals to amend their 2017 and 2018 tax returns. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes, you were reading that correctly, Senator Boquist.
And then how is there no revenue impact on this? Is it they're just amending their returns? And how many people are we going to ask to amend their returns? Because I understand you're basically you're taking a selection to tell us what you're going to do, so there's no revenue impact. I believe that's correct.
So, Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, there are people that have already included this on the personal side.
Right.
And so the people that we would need to amend are the individuals that didn't include it. And so I'm not sure that there's a number, if we know a number of people that did not include it, those would be the ones that have to amend. And to your question about the revenue impact, if DOR, so DOR is already enforcing this in this method. And so while they might have found that these amounts through audit, having them add it back won't change the amount, presumably, if DOR's enforcement method is the same as current law.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So
How is Mark, sitting in the back row, going to be able to know, or how is he going to know he needs to go back and amend to his 2017 and 2018 tax returns?
So, Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, that's probably an administrative Department of Revenue question. I assume that they would in some way reach out to taxpayers to indicate that this change has occurred, but I don't want to speak for the department's action without knowing for sure.
Wow, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jeff Newgard.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jeff Newgard with the Smart Growth Coalition. This may be one of the first committee hearings on this bill that we actually don't have a long letter for you all to read. We just wanted to iterate to the committee that we're in support of the Dash 8 amendment. We met with the department and with staff on Friday to work through the language and kind of figure out an appropriate and fair way to address that apportionment issue that came up during the last bit of the hearing on Thursday. So we just wanted to signal our support.
Yeah, appreciate that. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Deanna Mack, did you want to come and put something on the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And I wanted to also get on the record with Jeff. We did meet on last week, and we worked through the language issues on the Dash 8, and the department is good with the Dash 8s. To further answer Senator Boquist's question about how taxpayers are going to know what they're supposed to do, we have been instructing taxpayers to add this back all along. We have several dozen that have already done that. It's a small population of taxpayers. I think that we will make sure that the taxpayer, tax practitioner community will also know that this has been moved to another section of law, and so we will share that with them so that they can amend if their clients didn't follow our guidance originally.
Okay. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Mark. So Mark doesn't know and he doesn't find out, and then you guys find there's a mistake. What happens?
Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, I believe there's some provisions in the bill, I think, that say it's section 7, that we will not impose interest or penalty that would otherwise apply to the taxes due to that under if there's an underpayment that's solely from the operation of that addition. I believe that's the section 2 provision, right, Caitlin? Yeah.
Yes.
Can you say a small amount? Do you want to wager a guess unofficially?
Of number
taxpayers.
Of taxpayers? We have, I think it's about 36 taxpayers between 2017 and 2018. They're very complex taxpayers. They're definitely represented in this particular type of transaction, represented by practitioners.
36?
About, that have filed already claiming the addition, yes.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Okay. Are we talking personal income tax? I'll be honest, I haven't read the amendment, okay? And so I don't know, it's, you know, I should be in rules right now issuing notice of minority report, but requires that when a personal income tax, and most of this is gonna be coming out of corporate income taxes, so are we talking personal income tax, or I'm just trying to get on the record here.
Right.
You've allayed my fears, since it's only 36, the note I just gave to the vice chair doesn't apply, so therefore I'm just trying to, because we're going back 2 years.
Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, the repatriation applies to any entity that has got these foreign transactions. So that includes C corporations, which we dealt with in February of 2018. It also includes S corporations and partnerships. And those, as you recall, are called flow-through entities. They pass through to the personal income tax return.
I was in the courtroom, yeah, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
You were there too, by the way.
I was, yes. So
we're still speaking.
So the taxpayers, so a very small, most of these people are C corporations. I think that's where most of these types of entities are doing this business, but there are other types of entities. So this is the same treatment. So it's just going through to the personal income tax return for a small number of taxpayers.
Senator Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, the clarification is that they will receive the so-called dividend treatment, or that's how we're going to approach this, and with an 80% deduction. Am I correct there?
So the way that the double deduction works is that the federal law has several different versions. Mr. Chair and Senator Benz, apologize. So we're clarifying that they're not allowed to claim both the 50% deduction at the federal level, but instead we're giving them the Greater Oregon 80%, 70 or 80% deduction. I think it's the 80% deduction. So to eliminate the potential that they're taking 130%.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
So the I guess the issue is, have you received any expressions of concern from those that you mentioned earlier, the 24 or so, about the Dash 8 amendment and the approach that you, because just to blab on for a minute, I spent too much time looking at the Dash 5s, and it appeared to me that the Dash 8 was actually a move in the direction that those who were subject to the apportionment would embrace. Is that a correct understanding?
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, or Senator Benz, apologize. The apportionment provisions only apply to C corporations, not the personal income tax side of the world.
And I hopped ahead. So forgive me for jumping from one
right.
concept.
So in the Dash 8 amendment, sorry, I pulled up the right one. It talks about the amount that shall be the net amount of the dividend that's still included in income. So there's 20 or 30%. It applies to the factors. We're going to look to the taxpayers' specific facts and circumstances to apportion that net apportionable income according to the tax. It's going to be determined by that taxpayer's apportionment factors. And apportionable income isn't always included. It doesn't always get factor representation, but it also doesn't always not get factor representation. It's based specifically on the taxpayer's facts and circumstances. And this Dash 8 gets us to that place.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. So my question was, are they happy or are they unhappy with this, with what's in the Dash 8? By they, I mean those who are subject to this particular portion of the bill.
So my understanding, Senator Haas and Senator Benz, is that the industry folks are okay with the Dash 8. We worked with Nikki Dobe representing COST and then Jeff Newgard representing the Smart Growth Coalition. And the folks that did have originally concerns, they no longer appear to have concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dia.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, committee. We've reached that point. We've had, this is our seventh hearing on this bill. Are we ready to go? Senator Boquist?
Yeah, I want to speak to the motion when it gets out there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 851.
Senator Benz moves the Dash 8 to Senate Bill 851. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objections? Seeing none, the bill is amended with the Dash 8s.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 851 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves Senate Bill 851 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fine with the bill and the concept. I'm a little bit nervous because I'm trying to think back to 2005, and my mind is doing real well right now, to think when in a revenue committee we have gone back two full tax years and changed the tax law. I get the concept and all the issues. I understand all that. And I'm fine voting for the bill. I'm just, if we've gone back two tax years, that's longer than I think we've ever been allowed to go back and not got ourselves in legal hot water. And I'm just concerned that if one of these people is not happy with this, I mean, we are going back not 18 months or something, we're going a long ways back. I'm fine with the concept and how we do this. I'm just worried we're likely to have some opposition someplace else. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bev?
Yes.
Chair Haas?
Haas votes aye. Senate Bill 851 as amended will go to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. I will be the carrier. And hopefully we've heard the last of guilty for a while on this side. And
I voted for bills to go back at least 1 year.
Representative Marsh. What bill are you here on? 23?
So if one of these people, these are all rich corporations. One of these people wants to push back.
3137?
Find out.
I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3137. Mazen, is this in your portfolio?
Yes.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, Senate Bill 30, sorry, House Bill 3137 is one of two bills that deal with the transient lodging tax issue. This one primarily allows for timing kind of cutoff of payment and when it's supposed to be reported in the return. So this primarily says that the return is when the stay or when the actual act of staying ends. This bill was also amended in the House Revenue Committee to be an implementation date of 1/1/2020.
Questions of Mazen? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Senator Haas, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I am a House representative from District 5, which is the other side of the state, Southern Jackson County. My remarks really just reflect what you basically heard from Mazen. As you know, Oregon collects a transient lodging tax, currently 1.8% on overnight stays at hotels, motels, and other short-term lodging facilities. With the advent of online bookings, hosts or online intermediaries sometimes collect payment for a reservation far in advance of the actual stay. This can cause confusion regarding the timeline for collecting and submitting transient lodging taxes associated with that stay. House Bill 3137A clarifies that the tax is due when occupancy ends and should be filed during that reporting period. This aligns with the accrual method of accounting most typically used by these entities. Straightforward clarification of TLT procedures and the first one of two we have to talk about today.
Pretty straightforward. Senator Benz.
You want a motion or a question?
Question.
I have no questions.
Questions over here.
I could make one up just for the representative.
It might not be a bad idea.
Why is the sky blue in pretty Ashland?
I'll have to look and see if it is today, I guess.
Yeah, last summer wasn't so blue.
That's right.
Okay, a motion, Senator Benz.
Sure, I move House Bill 3137 to the floor with the best recommendation. A, I'm sorry, 3137A.
Senator Benz moves House Bill 3137A to floor the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the bill moves to the Senate. And I'll close out that work session and open up a public hearing. And Senator Riley?
Sure.
Senator Riley will be a carrier. I will open up a work session and public hearing on House Bill 3138.
Why is the sky blue in Ashland?
Because we're going in consecutive numerological order in this committee today.
Chair Hess, and 3138 is a second bill that also has to deal with the transient lodging tax issues, and this one goes back to the time of them when the tax was instituted, and what basically it allows for primarily individuals who do renting for less than 30 days. That they are exempt from actually reporting the tax and being treated in that way. However, with the advent of the new models of over the internet companies and so on, that became an issue that might not fit the business model for those companies, and basically it would be more of an issue for them to sort it out rather than comply with it. So this basically allows for the 30-day exemption to be only for individuals rather than the transient lodging intermediaries.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Senator Hess. Members of the committee, again, for the record, I'm Pam Marsh, House Representative from District 5. And again, I'm going to repeat a little bit of what you just heard. basically another efficiency and clarification of the transient lodging tax. In this case, you know that an owner who is renting his or her home for fewer than 30 days in a year, for example, for an eclipse or a once-a-year hunting trip, is not required to collect or remit transient occupancy tax. That individual is responsible for adhering to the 30-day limit. However, determining the 30-day threshold is problematic when the property is rented through an online intermediary. The intermediary, or multiple intermediaries in many cases, has no way to track or assess the homeowner's long-term intentions. House Bill 3183 clarifies that the 30-day threshold does not apply to units that are rented out using an online platform. Instead, those intermediaries will collect and then remit transient lodging tax from the first day of a customer's stay. Again, straightforward clarification to bring our transient lodging tax into modern day both technology and practices.
These are straightforward. They both do with lodging tax. They both have the same relating clause. I'm just curious as why they weren't into one bill.
Thank you, Senator.
It's not really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, you can answer. I just.
Thank you, Senator. We had a number of concepts around TLT that we started with at the beginning of the session, and some of them fell by the wayside, and some of them still continue in separate bills. So. Just sort of, we were airing these issues individually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, the use of the term platform, perhaps you'll say a few words for purpose of the record to explain what that is.
Well, online platform are those entities that use technology to advertise on typically on behalf of another entity. The availability of lodging. So intermediaries is a definition that we worked with in the 2018 short session in the transient lodging tax legislation that we did at that time. And online intermediaries or online vendors is, I think, a generic reference to those companies that many of us know that are well known in this world.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
I was just curious why it was necessary. Why wouldn't someone simply say transient lodging in any manner by a transient lodging intermediary, as opposed to the necessity of having a platform? I mean, I have no objection to it. I just thought it odd that it was in there as a part of the definition
in the actual bill. I don't think I can speak to why specifically that was placed in there, but we typically do refer to them as online platforms.
Right.
I'll name it just to make sure I understand. I think I understand what you're talking about. You're talking about things like Airbnb, Travelocity, Booking.com. That's an online intermediary in theory.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, yes. And I'm told that there are as many as 140 of them now of various kinds and flavors. So it's a big part of our transient lodging business.
Senator Benz.
So Craigslist.
I think does Craigslist qualify as an online platform? I would have to delve into that. But the intention here is that whenever an entity that is not the owner, an owner can reasonably assess whether she intends to rent out a facility for up to 30 days. Once that responsibility has been handed over to someone who's not the owner, there's no way to assess what the owner's intentions are. So the intention is any intermediary that's dealing otherwise than the owner.
Thank you.
Other questions, Representative Marsh?
Okay, thank you.
Want to let this breathe for a while? Are you ready to go today, Senator Benz?
Let's be done.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3138 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves House Bill 3138 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just quickly, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Just to make sure for the record, my understanding on the record is that if an owner is renting out their own home or whatever themselves without anybody else, that's where the 30 days applies. And if they're using some other technology outside platform, then it no longer applies. That's
right.
just the clarification. I'm fine with the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 3138 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Moving down the line, Senator Boquist, would you like to carry this bill?
Delighted. Good bill should pass. Right, Representative?
Okay. Close out the work session on those. Thank you, Maz.
Why is this guy not lit? Because it's cloudy.
Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2460. Jamie?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. This House Bill 2460A deals with estate taxes, and this provides that the transferee of the homestead is not liable for amounts outstanding deferred property taxes due on the homestead. Transferee receives no interest in real personal property from the estate.
Oh, yes.
And we have no expenditure impact and no revenue impact, as this conforms with the Department of Revenue's current practice.
Right. We aired this out on the 28th of May. And I think I'm ready to go. You guys are ready to go. Senator Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move for House Bill 2462A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves House Bill 2460A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2460 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. If only we had a lawyer who worked in the state laws. Senator Benz, would you like to carry this?
Happy to do so.
Thank you.
Well, that means the next one goes to Senator Taylor. Let's pick a hard one.
I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2949. Is that your...
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2949A deals with what's been called the property tax cliff for people that live in manufactured dwellings. And so with large counties, essentially, when the value escalates, they suddenly owe the property tax on the entire amount of the piece of property. So this would allow in these large counties, populations of 570,000 or more, for the county to specify the additional value above the current $34,000 threshold, or a similar approach to mitigate that cliff.
Right.
And we have a dash three that just provides just some technical conforming language.
Senator Riley.
So, how many counties is that?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, I think we have just approaching three counties now.
Three. Thank you.
So, for the record, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
This only impacts Washington County. That's you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Multnomah County and Clackamas County.
Right.
Okay.
I assume that those are the three.
Okay. I don't care. You want to do this?
I can do it.
Oh, fine. No, I'm good.
It doesn't affect the county of Jefferson.
That's right. It does affect my counties. You want something? I'm trying to be bipartisan and give Portlandia whatever they want, okay? As long as it doesn't impact my district.
Okay? Senator Benz.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash, is it A3 or dash 3 amendments to...
A3.
A3, dash amendment to House Bill 2949.
Senator Benz moves the dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2949. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2949 as amended to the floor. Do-pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves House Bill 2949 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2949 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and I will be the carrier. So that gets us down the list here.
2141. Looks like.
Yeah, 2141 and 3118. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2141. And I'm going to open up a work session as well on 2141. Kyle Easton.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2141A. This is a bill that's relating to providing uniformity and uniform certification and requirements related to certified tax credits and also the transferability of tax credits. So in OLIS, you'll find in the meeting materials, there's a document called the section contents. I'll just refer to that for the description. But really, there's three component pieces to this bill. And the first one is Section 2, and it's related to tax credit transfer. So again, it's trying to get the uniform language in place that will apply to all the tax credits that are being transferred. So you have the timing and notice requirements and such that are in there. Section 3 of the bill relates to tax credit certifications. This is going to be in cases where tax credits are certified by another agency, and then how they track that information and supply it to Department of Revenue so they can use it to track when taxpayers are claiming it. And then the third piece is actually in Section 4 is related to what we'd refer to as the clawback language in instances where, say, a taxpayer has received the benefit of a tax credit and the certifying agency discovers or there's some reporting to the certifying agency of the taxpayer not fulfilling whatever requirement they had of the credit to begin with. So in that case, then you'd claw back that benefit of the credit. The remaining sections of the bill are really about, in a lot of cases, putting this language throughout the individual statutes related to these certified tax credits. A number of these you may notice have expired, but they could be still applicable due to carry forwards of the tax credit. So it seemed prudent to include this language from House Bill 2141A throughout the various credits and the remaining sections throughout the bill.
Thank you. Deanna Mack. Could you explain to us the problem that this seeks to fix?
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue. And like Kyle just described, the House Bill 2141A has three significant parts: the uniformity in how tax credits are transferred, a requirement that state agencies who certify credits inform the department of the specifics of the certain credits, and then the uniform clawback provisions for when a taxpayer who earned the credit no longer qualifies for it. The transfer provisions, I think, in this bill are applicable as of January 1, 2020. The changes from our point of view are administrative in nature because left unchanged, they cause difficulty for us, for our partner agencies, as well as for taxpayers and tax professionals. Originally, we introduced this bill as a DOR bill in House Bill 2286 in 2017, and we worked with Representative Marsh and then Senator Bence when he was still representative to get it to the shape that it's in today. So the goal of this bill is to provide the means for the department to ensure that a taxpayer who is entitled to the credit claims it and only the total amount of the certified credit and not more. We currently do this through a mixed approach of real-time processing and audit, but we want to use automation and full use of the tools we have in our new return processing system to do that. Additionally, capturing this information in electronic format will provide more detailed information for forecasters, such as your LRO staff, to better understand how credits are claimed in current and future years. So currently, for as far as the tax credit certification component goes, we currently have agreements with various agencies that certify them to send this information to us, but they all prefer to have this actually in statute, in particular because we're dealing with like Social Security numbers, that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure that they have they feel comfortable. So that's one reason why we have it. And then it has some uniform timing and those kinds of provisions in there. The bill also provides for uniform provisions for clawbacks so that we know the taxpayer has an appeal, they can do, all practitioners are going to follow the same set of rules when they have to go through an appeal process, that kind of stuff, when it comes to billing back for something that they have not complied with at the end of the day. So also, it holds the person, if the credit had been transferred, it holds the transferee harmless, and instead we collect from the person who sold the credit, because they were the ones who it was incumbent upon them to do the work. So that is basically, Kyle, I think, said everything else that needed to be said about it, but bottom line is that we think that uniformity is the key to be able to administer these various credits effectively, and we think it'll improve our ability to make sure that they are claimed properly and provide a better understanding for staff to know what is claimed and what is left to be claimed, the infamous tail that we're always talking about. So we ask that you pass this bill, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see the likely suspects, including the ones that you mentioned without naming, like the Department of Energy, who causes all loss or problems with these things. Is there a cat, and I'm skimming through this, is there a catch-all in there so that future entities that have tax credits are supposed to comply with this too?
And Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, that's the whole intent of this bill, is so that when you guys decide to create new credits, they will just flow, they will reference to these provisions. So going forward, you'll have that same uniformity.
Right. So hopefully we won't have any more Department of Energy debacles, right? Not your question, that's rhetorical, not for your answer. Well,
Senator Haas and Senator Benz, if we did, we would be able to bill back clearly for the amounts that were not properly claimed.
Okay. Thank you.
Was so in some transactions, a clawback is not pro forma, it's not used.
It is, Senator Haas, it is not pro forma. We have, I think, New Markets Tax Credit has a clawback, and it's kind of strange. And it's one of those where we have to work with another agency, and so that's kind of where we discovered the non-uniform procedures. Normally, the Department of Revenue issues a deficiency, and we make a determination on something, but when another agency certifies it, the rules were kind of very different. And so while that one has gone away, the clawback provisions are still there, and so we want to have uniformity on. The certifying agency makes a final order that the taxpayer, the claimant, didn't do what they were supposed to do, and then that person has ability to appeal it through that agency's administrative hearings process. Once there's a final order and it's a done deal, we can immediately proceed to collect from the person. And that is not the way it is currently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, well, first of all, I want to thank the department and for all the work on this bill, which is, this has been a long time.
Thank you, too.
In emerging. Do you think in its final form that it did folks come forward and say, we think this is going to damage our ability, is going to damage the device we thought we were buying when we acquired this? Did they come in and say anything? Did you hear from anybody that was fearful of these new requirements restricting what they thought they were buying when they acquired the credits?
And Senator Benz, I think that early on, I feel like there was someone when you were still in the House, but I think we worked through those issues, and because there's no one coming forward anymore. So hopefully we addressed all those concerns when we worked through this over the last few years.
And Mr. Chair, a follow-up. It could have something to do with the dramatic reduction in the amount of tax credits that we're creating, but nonetheless, there were quite a few out there. So
at the time, Senator Haas and Senator Benz, at the time that we started this in 2015, 2016, when we started developing the legislative concept, there were a substantial number of credits still out there. And since then, you folks have let many of them sunset. And so there's only two currently that are affected by this, and then the clawbacks for all the rest of them, if there were. But I think that most people who, they're not afraid of the clawback because they're supposed to do what they're supposed to do, and they feel confident that they're going to do that.
No, it's a good one for Senator Tanner to carry. She's not here.
28 pages. Okay, thank you, Deanna.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2141 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Betts moves House Bill 2141 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, just a remark.
Yeah.
It seems to me, Mr. Chair, that what we've done is we're getting closer and closer to have the perfect tax credit circumstance, and then we won't have any tax credits any longer. So it's in following the Treasurer's approach to try to peddle some of its software to other states, I'm thinking, This may be an opportunity.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Are there objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2141A goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Benz, you spent some time with this bill last year and before. Would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to close the work session and public hearing on 2141A. That moves us to page two of our agenda. It's very rare we get to a page two. And I will open up a work session and public hearing on House Bill 3138. Well, we did 3138. Excuse me. I just went to page two. I've got it on page one and two. So 3138 is done. And we're done.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are. Are you
Mr. Chair? Yeah, I'm fine.
Feeling fine?
I just numbered them one and two. There is an announcement on the Tax Expenditure Committee meeting tomorrow at 3. Mm-hmm. The technical effects amendment should be up this afternoon, within a half hour. So it'll be there for your viewing pleasure. Okay? We are adjourned.